Hey, Justin Bourne, good afternoon. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I don't know about you, but I was scared last night, and I've been scared. Oh, I was scared this morning when I went and walked the dog. I'm scared to get away from my Twitter now.
I know so much. It's
dude,
Jeff. I just finished an article called Two Sentences on Every UFA Deal Signed Yesterday. It's 4,000 words.
and in about 5 minutes, it'll be outdated.
I know.
Everything will change again. All the dynamics will change as the signings keep on coming. Dude, that was a fire. By the way, welcome to Hockey Central, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Curtis Gabriel is going to be dropping by in about 15 minutes. Chris Johnston towards the bottom of the hour. Borny, like, that was drinking out of a fire hose yesterday. That was turn on the tap and just let it run. I think we knew it was going to be busy. I think we knew there were going to be, you know, bold decisions and big decisions. The one thing that the flat cap has pretty much shown, whether it's by way of buyout or trade or signing yesterday, that if you want to change your team right now, you can't tinker. You have to do big, bold decisions, whether it's Minnesota buying out Suter and Parisi, whether it's humongous Oliver Ekman-Larsson deals, or whether it's, you know, huge signings where expansion teams pay 6x6 for a goaltender. Like, yesterday was, I guess, sort of keeping in line with the times and the spirit of what this off season has been, which is anything but an off season. And it was volume and it was big. Like, yesterday had a little bit of everything. No, not a little bit. They had a lot of everything, including $600 million worth of contracts. What did you take out of it?
And, you know, come on down, deaf defenders. You're the next contestants on the Price is High.
Dude. You know? And, you know, it's so funny because we've talked about this. You've mentioned this. Like, this is the copycat league. So all of a sudden the Final Four have big, you know, humongous defensemen on the blue line. So what does everybody want now all of a sudden? If you're David a defenseman Savard that has a little bit of snarl and a little bit of size, you're getting paid.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going off the top of my head, but like David Savard and Mike Riley and Derek Forbort and Tucker Poolman, Cody Ceci, like, I mean, a half dozen guys got three, four years at $3, $4 million whose role in the team is essentially pay on the bottom pair and keep the puck out of the net.
Cody Ceci, he got 4 years, $3.5 million
yeah,
or 3.25. Yeah. Cody Ceci, who knows what the Canadian market is like, has been through it in Ottawa, been through it in Toronto. I don't know what they were offering in Pittsburgh, maybe like 2.25, 2 year deal. And he went for the, you know, for a longer deal with more cash, and you can't blame him for that, but Canada's tough on defensemen. Just be blunt.
Yeah.
And that market's going to be really tough on their back end. We got a lot to chisel through here. What were the big moves for you yesterday? Maybe not even just yesterday, but what have been the big moves for you in the entire week? And there are a couple of teams that really caught your interest. I know that's a lot of questions.
Well, no, it's good. The well, Dougie Hamilton going to New Jersey is a big one. But if you want to dial it back farther than that, probably what Vancouver has done and what Edmonton has done are the most noteworthy to me. Like, Vancouver, it's like Vancouver got a new GM who came in and said, I need to redo what the previous GM did because he did everything wrong, except it's the same GM. You know, like, he's fixing all of Jim Benning's mistakes as Jim Benning, which is pretty wild, but I think pretty justified. You know, it's one thing to make mistakes. It's another thing to be too stubborn to admit them. And he has looked them square in the face and made changes to that roster and I think made the team better in the short term. The Oilers are the other one for me where the back end, I just don't – like, I think they got better up front. Hyman and Fogle are nice players, and Derek Ryan's a fine depth signing. Like, they're a pretty good forward group. But their back end right now, they're going to roll out – so what do we got? Nurse, Keith, Ceci, Bouchard, Russell, Lagesson. Like, it's not a good defensive decor, and it doesn't solve any of the problems the Oilers have had over the past few years.
And the big one that the problem the Oilers have had too, they didn't address, although they were really deep in on Darcy Kemper, who ends up going to the Colorado Avalanche. I was told that Edmonton offered at least a first rounder and maybe a prospect as well. They were in on Darcy Kemper, but came out without Darcy Kemper at the end of all of it. Like, I'm with you. Like, I think that the decision to trade Ethan Bear is going to be a tough one for the Edmonton Oilers. I think Bear is an outstanding young defenseman. I think Ethan Bear made Darnell Nurse a better defenseman as well. Like, I almost looked at having Bear as a first pair right side defenseman with Darnell Nurse as an investment in Darnell Nurse as well. And we're all sort of waiting for an extension.
That good, hey? Like, I didn't
don't
know
you,
him as
he's
well.
Excellent.
People loved him, yeah.
He's excellent. He's and great in the community. Like, I got, listen, Carolina got a great one, I think, in Ethan Bear. But I'm with you. Like, I'm looking at the back end, and I'm looking at the goaltending with Edmonton, and I'm saying, man, you got Ferraris up front. You've got Connor McDavid. You've got Leon Draisaitl. You have Ferraris here. Like, I'd hate to be Edmonton to be included in that conversation with, you know, the San Jose Sharks and at various times, various incarnations of the Ottawa Senators as the best team to not
Canucks,
win the Stanley
yeah.
Cup.
Yeah.
Right? Vancouver Canucks in that convo too, for sure.
Yeah. No, it's they are really uniquely built. It is something to me, a guy like Kent Holland, who's been around the NHL forever, who just watched the Stanley Cup playoffs and the type of defensemen that were having success there, that he didn't make more of an effort to get guys who defend well. And maybe this is something of a rebuke of the analytics, if you will, but like Duncan Keith and Tyson Barry were in the bottom, like in terms of expected goals against. And I don't care how much you like that stat. It's just reflective of where the puck is when they're on the ice. And they're in the bottom of the league, like down 200th out of, you know, however many defensemen there are. So I'm surprised they didn't make an effort to say, let's get some big defensemen, some strong defensemen, and then just let our guys score goals. Keep it out of our net. Don't care what else they do. Instead, they got a lot of guys who move the puck and don't defend particularly well. And I think they're going to have 1980s Oilers scores more than anything.
Eyes on Edmonton. I want to get back to your Vancouver point because I think it's a really good one. I'm impressed at I'm always impressed when general managers admit their mistakes. And you referenced this right off the top. And we saw this with the Oliver Ekman-Larsson deal where, okay, these contracts need to be moved out. Okay, my bad. This isn't working out. Let's change this. And it's amazing what happens when you put one new defenseman and one new forward in the mix. And I know the Jason Dickinson deal was done last week, and that has helped as well, where everything just sort of settles nicely. Like, you look at the top six for Vancouver now, and I know there's deals still to be made with Elias Pettersson, and of course, Quinn Hughes on the back end. And those aren't going to be easy deals. If they were easy deals, they would have been done by now. But when you look at Vancouver, and again, they're playing in the Pacific. And I know we haven't dropped the puck yet, but if you're going to look at what many consider to be the weakest division, Vancouver's a better team. Some would say a much better team in a weaker division. They're in a great spot. Just look at their, I don't even want to say top six, Borny. Look at their top nine. All of a sudden, that looks really good. And if you're Travis Green, all of a sudden now, and this is just by dropping Connor Garland in and picking up Jason Dickinson, you have three lines that can score. When's the last time we said that about Vancouver?
No, you're right. I like the look of that team in terms of their ability to produce offensively in particular. Like, they are really good. I would say they'll probably be a top 10 team offensively next year. We'll see how high up that list they can get. You know, similar problems to what the Oilers had in the past is a lot of guys who don't defend overly well, but you know, can move the puck and all that on the back end. You know, they do have a guy named Thatcher Demko who you know, I think is poised to be one of the better goaltenders in the league here. We'll see if that comes to fruition or not, but let's say he has a great year and they get good goaltending and they score like they do. There's no reason to believe that this is not a very good team in that Pacific Division next year.
Real nice. I thought, I mean, I'm biased because I really like the not just the player, but the person. I thought the Luke Shen acquisition is a really good one when you're looking
for
a depth defenseman, right? Like, that's a real nice deal. And then it's like, we're just going to have a run on right shot defenseman, not just, you know, not just Luke Shen, but
Kyle Burrows
comes in. Brady Keeper. I love Brady Keeper. I love the story. I love the player. He's got some snarl to him as well. Brady Keeper's a real nice one too. Like, honestly, like, we're used to sort of roasting Vancouver, and no one roasts them more than their own Twitter sphere, but you have to be the most cynical Vancouver Canucks fan to look at what Jim Benning did and say, psh, get rid of this guy.
Yeah, the argument, I guess, is what is success? You know, for the Vancouver Canucks, is it getting to the playoffs? And I think Benning has mentioned that they want to be a playoff team. If that's a success, I believe Benning has put them in a position to succeed. If it's winning the Stanley Cup, I'm more skeptical.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not sold that they're all the way there yet.
The moves that they just made and getting rid of those, like they're eating a lot of term here on Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah.
Like this is 7.2 on
your
cap.
Been great until, the last couple.
No, he hasn't, and I kind of. Man, when you come out of bad environments, I always give – I know you should be like, oh, players have to always be given 110%, et cetera. It's hard, man. Like, I get it.
It is.
You play on a tough market on a losing team. I know what that can do for your own performance. Let's not pretend that, you know,
well,
that
and
wouldn't
not
affect
just
us
that.
Too.
I know, but, not but just my, that, my, Jeff. Sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say it's also just the players around you are good enough to help you. So it's not just a motivation thing. Sorry, carry on.
Yes. No, that's fair. The point that I was trying to make is this is when you look at who they moved out, how they moved them out, who they brought in, what terms are attached to those contracts. I think in a lot of other years, you may have looked the other way and done a different deal, but this very much sounds like if Vancouver doesn't quote unquote do something, then there are going to be casualties. Whether it's at the general manager level, at the coach level, maybe both, who knows, probably not coach, but more general manager. Like, does this not, all the Vancouver moves, and again, I like them. Who knows if they're going to work out, but right now on paper, I like them. Does it not feel like these moves were made because Vancouver has to be all in or else people will be losing their jobs?
It does, and you know, I guess people differ on how you feel about that. Like, do you want a GM in a position where he feels like he has to make moves or he's going to get fired? Because he may not make moves that are the best interest of the franchise long term.
That's how you right? That's how you get Martin year out for Philip Forsberg deals.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. It's like now or never. Take them. Take all our prospects. Take our picks. Who cares? And I think some would take a look at what happened in Vancouver and say that kind of happened. So certainly the pressure's on to succeed now because it came at the expense of the future.
Going to be joined here by Curtis Gabriel, the Toronto Maple Leafs, in a couple of moments. We'll get on the Maple Leafs page with him here in a couple of seconds. What do you make of Montreal? They lose Deneau, they bring in Savard, and a lot of it yesterday was under the umbrella and under the shadow of the Jeffrey Molson statements and plans on what to do with Logan Mailloux, and pretty much saying, we made an error in judgment, good to cop to that. As far as just on the ice goes, what did you make of the Habs moves yesterday?
I mostly liked them. You know, I actually shouldn't say that. I liked them. It was good. The Mike Hoffman deal is to me something they needed. Like, they didn't have an overflow of guys who could shoot the hockey puck into the hockey net, and that's what Mike Hoffman does. You know, like, you don't need him to do anything else. He does the thing that's hardest to do in the game extremely well. So I thought that was a nice acquisition. I think it reflects well on Hoffman that St. Louis tried and wanted to keep him. And from there, Savard, you know, it's the thing, like, you lose Shea Weber, you want to grab another big, tough guy who can eat a lot of minutes in the postseason or at least play hard farther down your lineup for cheaper. So I like both of those acquisitions.
You know, there's a couple of people that I talked to in the St. Louis Blues organization, and the one common thing with Mike Hoffman that they kept coming back to until it was sort of, you know, remedied towards the end of the season, all of a sudden the production picked up. No one could really figure out why you would bring in someone like Mike Hoffman who, well, let me ask you, what's Mike Hoffman's main skill set?
What does Mike Hoffman do? Slapping right. It on the power play.
Great wrists, you know, like, is he even rolling his wrists? The puck just flies off his stick and the red light goes off. No one could really figure out why St. Louis was so hesitant to put him on the power play.
Yeah, that's pretty inexplicable.
Like, wouldn't it be the obvious thing? Like, you look at his stats and you go like, yeah, 17 goals, a soft season for Mike Hoffman. And then you go like, well, how long did it take them to put him on the power play?
Yeah, you know, I have a theory with Mike Hoffman that, like, if he's the flank guy on your PP1, you're probably not an awesome team because that's where the most elite players in the NHL play. But there are 31, now 32 teams in the NHL, and that means there's 32 flank guys in the NHL playing the flank. I think he's one of those guys. He's definitely a PP1 flank guy. Just, you know, he's not elite among them, but he should be there.
Uh-huh. Of the we'll get to the American teams here a little bit later on at the bottom of the hour with Chris Johnston. When you look at, we mentioned Edmonton. Oh, we have Curtis. We'll pick up on that conversation in a couple of moments. I'm sure this intro is going to put a smile on our next guest's face. Joining us now, Curtis Gabriel of the, dramatic pause, Toronto Maple Leafs. First of all, Curtis, Ryan, thanks so much for joining me here and Justin on the Hockey Central program. You may have dreamed about it as a kid. I know you're a Leafs fan growing up. What goes through your mind when you hear Curtis Gabriel of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
First of all, thanks very much for having me, Jeff and Justin. Yeah, it's a crazy feeling. Obviously, some team you always keep up on growing up. Could not be a Leafs fan. So it hasn't really sunk in, I don't think. And just skating at the rink here, all the boys asking me about it. Like, yeah, I don't think it's sunk in. My mom's on a bike trip in Quebec. She's freaking out. So I can't wait to see her in person. Just kind of strange, so, but it's extremely exciting. And man, you know me, Jeff. I'm fired up beyond the
belief. Listen, every time I've seen you, you're fired up. Like, you're like a real intense guy. And, you know, I can imagine at your skate this morning, because I know that Nick Suzuki is one of the guys that you skate with in London consistently. I'm not sure if Nick was there today, but if he was, what did mortal enemy, Montreal Canadian Nick Suzuki say to you?
Yeah, it's hilarious. Actually, you know, it's funny. He hasn't even texted me yet, so maybe I got to check my phone a little bit more. But I'm sure it's going to make our battles even more interesting. Last summer, you know, getting to know him a little bit more over the summers I've spent here in London. And, you know, he's one of those guys that even in summer skates, I know I can go at him, a former Owen Sound Attack alum, and he's going to give it right back to me. He's a thick kid, and he plays really hard. So we have some great battles in the summer. So it would be pretty cool if I find myself on the ice and I could go against him.
Before I hand this to Justin here, I just want to get with. So who do you skate with now? Like, I'm always curious about who players are skating with. I think our audience is too.
Yeah, so like right now we have a scrimmage going on Friday. So the names are, we got Lawson Krause, Boone Jenner, Bo Horvat, Greg McKegg, the Suzuki brothers, Kairu, Bretzini, Colton White, Isaac Ratcliffe. So really good group of guys that we kind of get to go at it a little bit. So today is more of like a skill skate. Tomorrow we'll turn it up and have a full like 5-on-5 kind of skate.
That sounds fun. Justin, like a fun skate, hey bud.
It does. It does for sure. When you look at this Leafs roster, part of you must feel like there's something they lack that you can provide. Do you see some opportunity ahead for you?
Absolutely. I told Kyle yesterday on Zoom. I mean, I love that you got Wayne Simmons, a Toronto guy who can play and play physical. You got Bunting coming in, who's the rat, Energizer Bunny, who can get under people's skin and play. And I feel like I round out that triplet of players that can kind of bring everything. We touch on everything. And three Toronto area, Ontario boys, going to bring that work ethic and grit. I think it sounds unbelievable to me. So, yeah, I see a lot of opportunity.
You know, once upon a time, we were with Curtis Gabriel, the Toronto Maple Leafs, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Once upon a time, toughness meant fighting, and that was it. Fighting, period. The games took 4 hours, and you spent as much time picking up gloves and sticks as you did actually playing a 60-minute game. But what does toughness, Curtis, in your mind, mean in 2021? What does it mean to be tough now in the NHL?
I think it's just a relentless desire to outwork the opponent and whatever that means. So that means, you know, putting them to the wall. That means a detailed stick check, detailed system play, just being hard to play against. And, you know, Kyle even referenced that too. It's my ability to get up and down the ice and make life miserable for the other team and being hard to play against. That's what toughness is now. Of course, if it leads to fights, great. If it doesn't, great too. And, you know, it's a long season, and we're going to have to find ways to do it not fighting. So I think it's extremely exciting to me that the game's kind of shifted back to that. We love the skill, and we love where it's at, but there's always going to be that intimidation factor, always that hardworking, gritty factor, and hoping to bring that to this roster and kind of complete it.
Curtis, when I was playing hockey every summer, I used to have something that I was working on in the off season, and I know that Kyle Dubas and their staff likes to take their new players and say, here's what we think you can get better at. Is there anything this off season that you're focused on in adding to your game?
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. I already knew Barb Underhill and the amount of people, Haley Wickenheiser, Richard Rottenberg, all these people reaching out to me today. I have a whole, you know, set of calls later to go over all that kind of stuff. But for me personally, it's just continuing to play with the puck. Like, you can skate all you want without the puck, but just having awareness. And I think the thing I've learned a lot is, like, hockey IQ is a lot of just being able to be aware and being able to play at a fast pace and shoulder checking and understanding, you know, if I can see the play, I usually can make it. It's when, you know, the play gets fast, you know, that's when you got to be able to dial it in and make those plays under pressure and stuff. So for me, it's just constantly playing with the puck and adding different elements to my game, whether it's puck protection, whether it's creating space, Just things like that can help drive offense.
Who's helped you the most in your career, whether it's on ice, whether it's off ice? Like, I know when you get to the NHL, there's a lot of people you want to thank. When you're in the NHL, there's a lot of people you want to thank. When you get to new teams, new markets, maybe, you know, in your case, one that you grew up watching and admiring, there's a lot of people you want to thank. Like, you're a really grateful person. Like, I know that about you. Who are you grateful for as you you embark on a Maple Leaf journey here?
100% my mom. Like, there's nobody that comes close. It's been me and her since. She's really the reason I got on this journey of pro hockey at 16. So I had no plans to. I was never a top-end player. And she just said, hey, everybody else is trying out for Junior A. Why don't you go try out? And here we are 12 years later. I'm signing with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And so it's always going to be her. Nobody's ever going to kind of surpass her. And I feel like we're in this journey together. So that's definitely my mom, Kim.
What's your minor hockey journey? I mean, I love to go out of my way to talk about, you know, Anthony Cirelli playing A and double A hockey right up until pretty much minor midget. And now look at him. He's, you know, one of the, you know, premier centers in the NHL. That you don't have to play triple A all the way in order to, quote unquote, make it. What was your minor hockey journey, Curtis?
Yeah, just a quick little synopsis. Just kind of started playing when I was 5, I think, and a couple years of house league, then select single A, double A. At 10 years old, I played AAA in Richmond Hill with Barclay Goodrow and the Richmond Hill Stars. Then our careers kind of took a total different, divergent path. My dad took his own life, and I went back to AA, single A, and my mom didn't know much. And Barclay went on to keep playing at a high level. And it's kind of funny how, you know, he signed with the Rangers now and signed with the Leafs. So for me, just from there, hockey became just about having fun. And then at 16, my mom just said, hey, other people are trying out for Junior A. You know, I was playing, I just come up minor midget playing AA. Just thinking I'm going to go to high school and figure out what I want to do with my life. And I go there, and just seemingly every child I go from there, I start playing well and growing into my body and just loving the competition and just focusing on going and having fun. And it's turned into this crazy ride. So, you know, not drafted to the OHL, just fell into a spot there. And then to get drafted as a double eligible player from Owen Sound at 20 when I didn't even know I could still get drafted. So it's been a crazy journey and a lot of work, a lot of ups and downs. But I'm just ready to give this opportunity everything I have.
Justin,
that's awesome. Oh, there you go. But before you joined up with the Maple Leafs here, did you have any impressions of the team, watching them from afar, what you thought about this group or what they were lacking or what their strengths were?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's, like I said, it's hard not to keep up with it. Obviously, Toronto's center of the hockey world and obviously being from there. So I'm just focusing on what I can bring, and I know that's my passion is my biggest thing. So I love coming to the rink. I love working hard and playing the right way, and I think it can be infectious. And I'm excited to just see how I fit in with that group and see what I can bring to them.
You know, it's it's always interesting whenever, whether it's a player, whether it's a coach, manager, whatever. Generally, the answer is, yeah, I know what I'm in for. But do you know what you're in for? Do you have a sense of what you're in for joining this team that's overly covered, overly analyzed, overly criticized, overly praised, overly everythinged, Curtis?
You know, as I said, you kind of get the scope, but it's like one of those things, like people tell you how big the universe is and you're kind of like, yeah, I can't really comprehend it. I don't think you'll ever be able to comprehend how much the Leafs mean to, this area. So no, I probably don't, but I don't think I could have handled it at a younger age. I think everything happens for a reason. I'm 28. I'm a grown man now. And I figured out a little bit more things about life, maybe emotional maturity. So I think if any time is going to be right for it, it's now. So I don't think it has sunk in. I don't think I will realize, but hey, let's go do it anyway.
Okay, let me ask you a completely frivolous question. For anyone that follows you on social media, what's the deal with baked potatoes?
Brock McGillis is just like laughing in his apartment right now. It's just some goofy thing. I like sharing, you know, a little bit behind the scenes of the stuff that we can. I think hockey's got a long way to go to continue and brand itself, and I think players should be encouraged to show what makes them kind of unique and stuff. So it was just the case of in San Jose, COVID was going crazy. I just didn't want to go to the grocery store and risk getting COVID. I'm trying to stay around there, so I just started couldn't get the bread I wanted. I eat a, you know, a certain way, and I just, potatoes were on the menu, so I just started baking potatoes and eating them in the morning. And people thought it was hilarious, so I just kept sharing it, and kind of took on a life of its own. But that, I just think that's great. Like, you know, you find out little things about players. That's what I like. I'm not a fan of the game first, so I thought that's awesome. Was just a funny little thing that came about.
I love it. I think I asked that one for Brock as well, just to make him smile if he's listening to the radio right now. There you go, Brock. That one's for you.
Exactly. And I got to give a shout out to Arm Dog, because Colby Armstrong gave me a call last night and was pretty fired up for me. And that was a pretty cool way to cap off the night of signing with the hometown team. So had to get him in there. And he's pretty pumped for me, too. And I know you know him well. So it was pretty cool that he's like, you know, you're interviewing your teammates a couple of years ago asking Jeff, you know, what are you going to do? And now you're signing with the Leafs.
I think everyone's happy for you. Like, anyone that knows you, Curtis, I think is like I've always said before, like, I don't cheer for teams, I cheer for people. And I cheer for people that have had hardships in their life and have overcome or are struggling and need a hand, or whose voices need raising, whose profiles need raising. And I think, like, good people need to be rewarded and talked about a lot more. And I know you're probably not going to want to put yourself in that camp, but you're in that camp for a lot of people. Like, you have, and you must feel this, like, you have a lot of people behind you cheering for you. You must know that, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I got like an army of love behind me. I think you just try to go out every day, and it's not always easy to be a good person. You got to make sacrifices and do the right thing consistently. But I think that comes back your way. Karma is a real thing. And I just want everybody in this world to be treated equally and judge each other on our character, our hard work, our passion, and our ability to bounce back and be vulnerable. I think that's kind of my message. Just gotta have love for everyone, and there's no reason to treat people differently for any other reason.
Borny, last one to you.
That's great. I just wanted to ask about growing up with your mother as the head of your hockey lifestyle. I was in the same boat. My dad was gone in the U.S. coaching, and my parents are divorced, and so my mom was the one who took me to the rinks all those years. And I definitely got a different look at the NHL or at hockey, and I guess my development was different because of that too. How do you think it was, you know, what was the effect of having your mom kind of be the head of your hockey life growing up as a young guy?
I never was like really old enough to get into that crazy hockey dad thing at 10 years old. You know, it was just probably just starting. So maybe in a way, you know, who knows, maybe my dad would have pushed me a ton. Maybe I would have burnt out. You know, maybe I wouldn't have played all those other sports all up until 16. Who knows? Right. But I think maybe I just got a late start to the passion side of it. And I don't know, maybe that's where I want to work so hard at it, because I just came from absolutely nothing with it. So I think her just never pushing it and just saying, go have fun and, you know, don't worry about it too much. I think that definitely molded, you know, how I did it. Maybe if I was the other way, maybe I'd play a higher level at a younger age, but maybe it doesn't work out. So, I'm very grateful for her just taking that approach that just, hey, go have fun, play hard, do what you love, and nothing else other than that.
What, a hockey mom saying you're allowed to go have fun? What? What is this? What is this beast you talk about, Curtis? A hockey parent saying enjoy yourself? What? I'm unfamiliar with this, but listen, you had a wonderful mom helping guide you all throughout your minor hockey career. Before we go, quick plug for you on social media, because as we know, you're not just a hockey player, but also an LGBTQ plus advocate. You know, you have your head on your shoulders, right? Where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, just on Instagram at Curtis Gabriel, on Twitter at Curtis Gabriel. Easy to find me. Try to just share what I believe in, and I think it just comes down to truth. Like, you know, there's a lot of views out there, but if we just stick to the facts, it's pretty easy to figure out what is right and wrong in this world. So, yeah, would love to have everybody join on board there and continue to kind of learn with me.
Listen, we wish you nothing but success. Curtis, thanks so much for stopping by. Congrats, and good luck with the Maple Leafs next season.
Thank you so much, Jeff and Justin. I appreciate the time.
There he is, Curtis Gabriel. Plays junior hockey with the Owen Sound Attack. Owen Sound, by the way, anchors City this year for Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada. The Harry Lumley Bayshore Arena. I know Sam McKee is somewhere saying, talk about the fries. Still the best French fries in the Ontario Hockey League, I would submit, and many others would as well. It's interesting the way that physicality, like traditional physicality, is making its way back in the game right now. Like, it's never going to be the way it was, Borny. I don't think those days are gone, clearly. But it's interesting the way that the game is sort of nudging back to a more traditional physicality. Do you find that?
Yeah, you know, I think hockey's kind of going to find a point with fighting where it settles into, you know, it doesn't happen often, but it's not not completely gone. And where we go back to, the game is never going to become pure speed and skill, non-contact. Like, there's still some regard now for, you know, the physical element just really matters, and it makes a big difference when the game games get hard. So, yes, there's almost an overcorrection, and we've kind of swung back to how important being physical in the NHL really is.
All right, we thank Curtis Gabriel for stopping by the program and the Maple Leafs for making him available. We'll pause making himself available after a very tiring, I don't want to say free agent day, but a sort of whole free agent expansion draft, NHL draft, nothing off about this offseason for the insiders. Chris Johnston stops by here in a couple of moments to try to make sense of what we saw yesterday and make sense of how the money was spent. We're talking about free agency with CJ in a moment. Hockey Central returns. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Justin Bourne, I don't know when it will end, but the Toronto Maple Leafs just signed another former Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound, Jack Kopaka.
Can't be true. It just cannot be true.
Coached by Sheldon Keefe and then later Drew Bannister.
Also, who? No disrespect to the guy, but I genuinely just don't know who that is.
I played in Belleville last year. He's an Anaheim pick. Jack Kopaka, Maple Leafs picking up. Today.
I gotta ask something here that's gonna make me sound dumb. Can you tell me where the space bar is in that name?
Like,
is it Jack Opaka?
Space? No, Kopaka. K-O-P-A. He was a fourth round pick of the Ducks back in 2016.
Jack Kopaka. Okay.
Yeah, it's left.
I thought the last name was Finnish and his whole last name was Jack Opaka. Like,
Jack Opaka.
Hannakainen.
Oh, that's a cool name. that would be us. I'd think about changing my name if I had that option.
Right.
Chris Johnston joins us from the NHL and Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. First of all, great job yesterday, CJ. But I should say, not just yesterday. Like, all through this offseason, which was anything but an offseason, how are your thumbs these days?
They got a good workout. They're feeling pretty nimble right now from lots of use. It's been a pretty wild 10 days if you go back to the trade that happened prior to the expansion draft list being finalized and everything that's happened from there through the first day of free agency. You know, I don't recall in my working career an NHL offseason quite like this one. You know, there might have been one way back in the day. I know, Jeff, you've always got good historical references, but this has been
Not like this. Not like this. This is the best. This is the juiciest one. You're right, CJ.
Well, I mean, you got a flat cap, you have a pandemic, you have a new team coming in. I mean, there's a lot of kind of black swan type of events or you know, things that probably won't be repeated all crashing together that I think created this marketplace. And you know, a lot of money was spent yesterday too, which is something we didn't see last year in October when we had free agency.
You know, there was, speaking of this, and we've been talking about, you know, tampering now for a long time, and how, you know, teams are more blatant about it. I don't think I'm telling tales out of school here by any stretch of the imagination. I remember when Zdeno Chara went from the Ottawa Senators to the Boston Bruins, and like, it was July 1st, 2007. I think that's when he went over. And like, it's a very detailed, sophisticated contract that was announced at 12:01, right? It's like, okay, how does that work? And a number of these deals would happen. I know the NHL said, like, look, this doesn't look good right now. Let's knock it off. Let's not have like these multi-year, multifaceted contracts announced at noon when the window opens, because just to be bluntly, it makes you look like you guys are involved in some shady behavior here with players that aren't free agents yet. And it kind of went away. But does it not feel, CJ, like that's coming back right now? Like, why don't you just put the interview period back in? Because it looks more and more like teams are just talking to players anyhow.
Well, the interesting thing about the interview period idea is that, you know, my understanding is even the NHLPA or the players, you know, agent side didn't love it because, you know, some people on that side of things felt that it made free agency too orderly, that you know, it actually reduced some of the frenzy you actually saw in free agency, which is, you know, generally been to player benefits when teams get a little bit desperate, when the market gets moving quickly. You know, maybe teams throw more money around. And so it was actually mutually beneficial that they would they got rid of it. And but, you know, I'm with you. I don't know the answer here, but clearly there was some degree of discussion that went on to lead to all those moves we saw between 12 and 1 Eastern time yesterday.
The interview process, Borny, I'm handing this off to you here in a sec. The interview process, I was told one of the annoyances was that players felt that they weren't just being interviewed about themselves, but teams would use the interview process to essentially go fishing for information about teams. It's like you bring in player X and all they ask about are other players. What's he like? Hard to play against? What are this player's strengths? And essentially it turned into an information fishing trip, and players came away from it saying, I don't know that I really talked to this team about myself as much as they used me as a scout for other players.
Interesting. It's sort of the same principle that applies if you interview a wide range of candidates for a front office job or head coaching job, that sometimes you get ideas in that process in addition to just, you know, targeting in on who you end up hiring. You know, I haven't heard that, but, you know, it does make sense. Every chance you can get to talk to someone outside your organization, I think, is an opportunity to learn something about other people around the league, but also to get maybe a fresh set of eyes on what you're doing as well.
CJ, your cohort last night, Elliot Friedman, tweeted about the Toronto Maple Leafs and their cap space, you know, $3.5 million, and that they may be looking to wield that for a top six forward. You mentioned even could be in line with a trade. What are your thoughts on what the Leafs are going to do with their remaining money?
Well, it's been an interesting offseason, right, for Toronto. I think that largely the Leafs' approach, you know, informed a little bit by their cap position, has been to stay a little bit more on the sidelines, watch some of the car crashes happen with other teams, you know, be it in the trade market we saw around the draft again, and then, you know, yesterday, you know, not really being major players in you know, a lot of the players that were there to be had. And, you know, I think now they're kind of, you know, lurking in the weeds, settling in a position where they can, you know, try to get some bargains still. And, you know, I agree with what Kyle Dubas said to the media that, you know, the one thing the Leafs can offer, maybe not as a top dollar contract to a free agent that's still looking for a job, but, you know, obviously there's some pretty enticing lineup spots, specifically on the left side in their top six, to play with some of their top players. And you know, if you're someone like Thomas Tatarse, who I think, you know, has some degree of interest from Toronto, you know, does that appeal to you? You might not be able to get top dollar out of the league just because of the cap. But, you know, maybe a chance to play with those guys is enough to get them here. I do think there's things they can do there. And so, you know, they've preserved that cap space. You know, certainly we don't have a complete picture yet on what their offseason is. But, you know, I think Toronto could even add two forwards at this point. Still to their mix, and you know, a lot of it will be dependent on what the second wave gets, and then if they don't question anything there, then I'm sure the trade market will offer some options as well.
I think what my colleague Justin was asking really there was, which former Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound will they bring in next?
I don't know. Is there any more Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound alumni still active?
Well, it's funny because we're just laughing about Jack Kopaka, who comes in, and that's someone who Sheldon had, I think, for only one season, and Drew Bannister took over. And, you know, Nick Ritchie is still out there, former Greyhound. So it's not as if the free agent market is bereft of former Sault Greyhounds. And, you know, I wonder if Ritchie might be a fit for this team. You know, Greyhounds jokes aside, you know, that was, you know, you go back to the draft where they took Nylander, and there was that, you know, collage of players in that mix that was Nylander and Nick Ehlers, and Nick Ritchie was in that conversation as well. Do you think that could be a fit for Dubas?
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it lines up with kind of the competitive age of their team. And, you know, let's face it, they're trying to identify players that are going to pop, right? Not guys that can command. It's too late for the Leafs to be in on someone like Blake Coleman, who's coming off two Stanley Cups and obviously had a lot of interest and got a big contract in Calgary. You're trying to find the next Blake Coleman or someone who can be a contributor to a winning team. And, you know, it didn't go so well for Ritchie, you know, not getting qualified, but he's still pretty young. And if it's there, even Andre Kasha, you know, there's a few sort of candidates. I mean, obviously this is a little bit of what the Michael Bunting signing was, is you're hoping that know, he's someone who can build on the success that he started to have in Arizona last year, and that he might be ready to hit at a greater level and outperform his contract next season. I do think all of these make sense if you're in Toronto's decision maker shoes. And you know, I think Richie does have a few different options out there. There's a couple teams, so it's, you know, it's not as though they're the only bidders, but you know, they have something nice to sell here.
Ooh, hang on. Kevin Weeks just tweeting moments ago, Tampa Bay Lightning signing Corey Perry to a 2-year deal.
There you go. Not a huge surprise, actually. You know, that notion's been out there. And look, you can see what Tampa's doing. You know, we haven't seen the numbers on that, but let's expect that it's a low cap hit, much like Zach Bogosian, but they're giving a little bit more term. So, you know, giving him 2 years, it's two more cracks at a Stanley Cup. He's been in the final the last two seasons. Obviously, at this stage of Corey's career, you know, it's all about trying to get his hands on another cup, and he's been very close. And I do think he's someone that had some interest in Toronto, maybe even some mutual interest, you know, both last offseason and this one. And you know, Montreal had tried to re-sign him as well. So, you know, you can be in a good spot, I guess, when you get to the stage of the career where you're still contributing a little bit, and you don't need to demand a big contract. I think that you know, your services are in demand, and you know, maybe the Lightning are going to go for a three-peat with Corey Perry in the mix.
So Corey Perry is trying to chase down a Stanley Cup, and I can't help but notice he didn't pick the Buffalo Sabres as his destination next year. What is going on? The Jack Eichel deal never happened. They signed Craig Anderson, and I forget who the other goalie was, another pretty close to the minimum was.
Aaron Dell.
So what's going on in Buffalo? Is the Eichel thing going to happen at all, or are they just planning on, I don't know, going forward with it as is?
CJ, I challenge you to answer this question without using the name Shane Wright. Go.
Well, look, they're not going to win a lot of games next season. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. You know, I still have to believe that some way, shape, or form the Jack Eichel deal will get done before training camp, but, you know, it doesn't seem imminent at this point in time. I mean, if anything, you have teams like Minnesota taking a step back and recusing themselves from those talks because, you know, it had gone on a long time and, you know, nothing materialized, and they've got to move on and commit their cap space elsewhere. Not to say it can't be revisited, but, you know, it's a difficult trade to make. It's complicated, you know, obviously by Jack Eichel's, you know, some of the uncertainty around his health. And, you know, at this stage, it just doesn't feel like it's necessarily in the cards to happen. But I do feel like ultimately if you've, you know, you managed to move on from Sam Reinhardt and Rasmus Ristolainen, I just don't see how it benefits you not to kind of go the whole way here and lean into the rebuild. And you know, I know no one that's a fan of that team in Western New York wants to hear that because they've been on a series of rebuilds that haven't yet produced any traction for the organization in the big picture. But, you know, bringing them back, I think, would be a difficult situation for everyone. So, it seems like the process is going to have to play out more because, you know, it certainly doesn't, I haven't heard anything that makes me think that trade is going to happen at any minute at this stage, but, I can't believe that they're going to just, you know, bring them back and that mm-hmm. didn't happen.
Absolutely. Listen, giving your thumbs a break, give your tongue a break as well. Great job with all the words, all the tweets, everything. Well done, CJ. Great season. Thanks so much for always coming on the program here, too. Really always have to go out of our way to make mention how much you go out of your way to come on the show. So on behalf of all of us, thanks so much for a wonderful season. Much.
Here.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, essentially, is what I'm getting to. Thanks, CJ. You're a wonderful guy.
If you guys need me August 10th, I'll even come on for you, and I wouldn't say that for just anyone. So,
hey, what's the running streak up to now? I asked you yesterday, I'm like, no, you didn't. You're not still doing your streak, are you? And you're like, oh yeah, I ran this morning at 5. What's the number up to now? Do you know?
I don't know. It's in the 450s. I know I hit 450. So,
God,
I don't
keep
going
to disappear.
Crack, but I'm still going. Yeah, I managed to keep it going in this. July was the challenge between being in Tampa for the Cup where the weather was not the best and I was working a lot and then obviously how busy last week was. But I'm going to get to 500 anyway, and that's early September.
I love it. You're a gamer. Thanks so much for the CJ. Great job, pal. Keep running.
All right. Okay.
There he is, Chris Johnston in the 400s.
Forrest Gump, man.
Holy
I just
geez.
Started running.
Started going. Let's talk about Seattle next. That's a really fascinating team, and they're probably not done. In the scant few minutes we have remaining here after this break, let's get on the Kraken page. More Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, Borny, a couple of moments left here. Vegas and Seattle, you know what they have in common?
What? I know a few things, but I know we have 90 seconds, and I don't want to waste your time.
They both need a first-line center, and we'll focus on Seattle initially here. First of all, I'm really impressed at what they're doing. I know it's not the same. Like, I know we judge everything against Vegas, but Vegas was a freak. Just as a traditional expansion team, building it out from the blue line, and as we found out yesterday from the net as well, Philip Grubauer almost gets the 6x6 he was looking for, essentially the Jordan Binnington contract. I think Colorado was offering the Leonard deal, 5x5. They got their goalie. The defense looks good. To me, the only question is, who's your first-line center? There's no answer for that right now. But what do you make of Seattle and their moves in the last couple of weeks?
You know, I struggle with it a bit because they have no salary cap problem. So giving Alex Wenberg, $4.5 million times 3 years, not a huge deal. But, like, if that was a Toronto Maple Leaf signing, I think we'd be like, whoa, 4.5 times 3 for Wenberg? So, you know, it's the same with Grubauer. It's like, I don't mind the deal. I think he's going to, you know, be a starter and a good starter for them for a few years. But, like, 6 years at $6 million, it's a big gamble. So, I don't know. I'm a little bit less bullish on Seattle. I still think they're going to be a competitive team, maybe even a playoff team, but I think there's more dominoes to fall, and we don't even know what their opening night roster is going to look like.
Giordano, Alexiak, Larson, Soucie, Dunn,
that's
Fleury.
Good.
Like,
that's really
that's
good.
That's a good blue line, man.
It is.
Like, I don't know who's going to score. I don't know how many goals they're going to score.
I
know they're going to defend. Yeah. This is going to be a team that defends. I'm just curious to see, a lot of things about Seattle, mainly the game presentation. We have Jerry Bruckheimer as an owner. It ain't going to be a traditional game presentation. You can be sure of that. Closing thoughts? Anything jumped out at you yesterday specifically you want to mention before we go off the air?
Go Toronto Greyhounds for Stewie.
Hound power in Toronto, alive and well.